Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, my good buddy, producer extraordinaire, and part-time therapist, Cameron McCoy. How you doing, friend?
It's a business casual Monday, man, so I'm here to just listen to everything, you know?
Yeah, Cameron, for those of you who aren't in the know, Cameron is a great listener, right? If you ever want to tweet at him, get some advice, he's there for you, 100%. And whenever he wants me to hear, or whenever I need to complain about a youth sport event, like it's the end of the world, Cameron, he's here for me. He's here to hear every word of it, and I appreciate you, man, for that. Cheers.
Yeah. What can I say, man? I'll always be here for you.
I got to ask you, Cameron, before we get into Magic the Gathering stuff, were you aware that there was a Super Bowl? This would be the big event that happened the week before the Oscars for your time.
Yeah, for some reason, because I'm associated with or I have friends in Kansas City, my Instagram feed just populated with all this like random red and, I don't know, an arrowhead sort of shaped thing on like everybody's feed. It was the weirdest thing.
Yeah. So I got to ask, did you actually watch said football game?
No, I didn't. I watched, let's see, maybe there was a little bit of football in between the J-Lo Shakira halftime performance that I watched on YouTube the next day.
Well, I do know you're a big Shakira fan, right? Who isn't?
I'm impressed with like both of those like performers. Holy cow. I'm impressed with like them being able to do what they do. You know, and I'm also impressed with your Chiefs, man. Congratulations. I mean, like, it's super exciting for Kansas City.
Sure. Yes. And thankfully, the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl resulted in a parade, which resulted in me getting a day off work, which resulted in me testing standard for like 6 hours straight, which is pretty groovy. So if you're wondering,
nice.
Did the Chiefs win help this show? Yes. Yes, it did.
I love it.
But dude, like literally, so there's a point in the game when it became basically a lock that the Chiefs were going to win. We scored like a touchdown. I say we, like I'm on the team, right? Mm-hmm. But we scored a touchdown in the final like minute and a half, and I was so overcome by emotion, I had to like leave the room. Like I had to walk out
and
go to my bedroom and shut the door, because like I just didn't know what to do. And you know, somebody like brought this up to me. It's like, isn't it a little silly to get that emotional over a game? And it's like, yeah, but here's the thing. Think of anything that you've wanted in your life.
Your lifetime, right?
Yeah, and if you've wanted that thing for, 30 some odd years, when it does happen, it's going to be impactful, you know, like no matter how silly it is, right? You and I, we still want a new Metroid Prime. That's going to be a great day when we get it in our hands, right? And that's been right, like a 10-year wait. But no, it was super cool. And I knew that you would be knee deep in it, all the statistics, right?
Absolutely. I just have this vision, though, of like the game is locked. You walk into the room, close the door. And the next thing is just your wife and children hear Enya just like blasting through the walls. And that's, I think, how you probably celebrate it.
Oh, dude. It was heavy. And like, you know, it's weird. It's like the Royals kind of meant more like in terms of what that like did. But, you know, this was kind of more like what you would think of as like a Cubs curse, like tons of close calls. Tons of misses, tons of like comically stupid ways to lose, right? Where the Royals are like this like profound like Cinderella story, like for those 2 years, where it was actually hopeless that they would ever do anything, right? Like if you would have told me before that run, hey, the Royals will win a playoff game, one playoff game, I would have said that will be the best day of my life, right? In terms of like sports watching. So there's just a difference in levels there, but no, super great. And you know this, Kansas City is very much a football town, so it's good times. Mm-hmm. All right, so all that aside, Cameron, I played a lot of Standard. And I want to get to Standard, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to cut off your segment, and we're going to make the middle segment all about Pioneer, if that's okay. Because you play Tested Pioneer like crazy.
That's smart.
The Pro Tour was Pioneer. I want just middle segment Pioneer floor to ceiling, if that's cool with you. So anyway, I have to confess something. I told myself I'm going to sit down and I'm going to buy Esper Hero, right? Wednesday happens. Mm-hmm. I wake up first thing in the morning. I decide not to go to the Chiefs parade. And I say, I'm going to buy a deck and I'm just going to crunch this whole day. And I had a good long look at myself in the mirror and said, I'm going to buy the Dream Trawler blue white instead, right?
Smart.
I just think it's better. You had recommended that. And I got to be honest with you, so much rust. I played it horribly. I lost a ton. Like, I lost like my first five or six matches in a row. It was brutal. And so much of it was me. Learning the deck, not playing it well. I was so locked into playing Esper Dance, which has this kind of like hang on until you can just combo kill them, right? Mm-hmm. That is not how this deck operates. It's much more of a traditional control list where you kind of have to be cognizant of your win conditions and what you're going to do throughout your sequencing of the game. Whereas Esper Dance is just hold on for dear life, hold on for dear life, and then you get them. That is not the experience here, right? However, once I kind of came around to the play patterns and how it's supposed to work, where and when I can use it, and I'm playing the one that the 5-mana saga Elspeth, I can't remember, not Death of a Chain, whichever one the Elspeth is, that's the 5-mana exile permanent. I'm playing
exile permanent.
Yeah, I'm playing with three copies of that main. That locking into the power of that and the interaction between bouncing that with Teferi and like reusing those over and over again, like it took me way too long to come up with that interaction and realize, oh, this is how I can recur removal, you know? Just little dumb things like that. But after I kind of locked into what I needed to be doing with it and how to use Dream Trawler specifically, because there are a large number of times where you do not attack with Dream Trawler.
Yeah.
I got completely blown out in a game. I attacked with a Dream Trawler. They untapped Nissa plus Nissa and just like were able to like go past me that way. So I think this deck is maybe the best deck in Standard, but it is not a lock. Like, if you look at Goldfish right now, it looks like, oh, man, blue-white is far and away the best. I think Simic Ramp has a pretty decent game against it, right? All the Nissa decks. As soon as you're playing Questing Beasts, you have a shot against a control deck, right? And, you know, the black-red aggro deck also can kind of have these wins with Embercleave out of nowhere. The deck that I've been, of course, the least impressed with as this Standard season has gone by has been the Witch's Oven decks. I just think they're just not operating where they need to be. And I haven't played the Life Gain deck, and I haven't played Esper Hero. Did you want to pop in with some Standard stuff? Like, have you been messing around with it at all?
Yeah, I mean, I have been playing quite a bit. I've been playing the same list as you, or I'm sure a very similar list with the blue-white Dream Trawler, Elspeth, 5-mana enchantment saga thingy. Both of which are fantastic and really, really good. I'm also still playing Esper Hero and having a great time with that. This week, I have been playing against the Life Gain deck an inordinate number of times. Like, I mean, it's the thing that I constantly see.
Really?
Where it's not, I mean, and I'm fine playing against that. I mean, like, sign me up. I have Tyrant Scorn. I have all these things to, like, remove whatever they're doing. So I don't find it nearly as problematic or annoying to play against as something like the Black-Red Cat Oven deck. And I totally agree with you, especially with the blue-white list. I've been having a lot of trouble against the Embercleave decks just because I feel like my instant speed removal, or they can just get you completely out of nowhere, right? Where it's much more of like that sorcery speed thing. So I totally agree with you that I think the blue-white list is one of the best decks in Standard. It does take, I think, some know-how as far as like how to best perform with that deck. Just because like you can't be as reactive as you are with like an Esper list, I think, with the really good black removal. So yeah, I totally agree with you on pretty much everything you're talking about.
I will say this also, like, it's probably one of the harder blue-white variants to play in quite some time. Because, you know, we always kind of pick apart the Sphinx's Revelation deck from previous Theros Standard as, like, maybe the easiest control deck to play ever. Hold on, Sphinx's Rev for a ton, Elspeth, six mana, or Elspeth Sun's Champion, and mm-hmm. off we go, right? Whereas this, you have to, like, you're playing some number of counter spells and some number of sweepers, and they don't always line up the exact way that you want them to. And there's mm-hmm. often times where, you know, like, you're playing some number of, like, I'm playing some number of Narsets, right? And then there are decks where Narset mm-hmm. is just a completely dead draw, just, like, not good at all, right? And so you have all these kind of things that aren't catch-alls in the way that previous, like, 5-mana Teferi, for example, when that guy was in Standard, there was literally never a matchup where you would side him out. He was always just never. That yeah. good, right? And this is a lot more nuanced with how you sideboard. And I feel like there's things like you might trim, or you might have to consider if you're on the player draw, which is very weird. Worth pointing out that Rug, like the Wilderness Reclamation deck, is kind of back in full force, kind of a little bit more of a thing. I've actually played against that more than I've played against Fires decks at this stage.
Interesting. Huh.
And the Simic Ramp deck, you know, if you look at like the metagame analysis or like Standard results, like it's not killing it. However, you can get into these like ridiculous situations where they have 3 or 4 lands in play and you're playing your second land, right? Mm-hmm. The new Titan, the Uro or whatever, the guy that's like 3 mana for yeah. like that card
the
is
ramp thing. Yeah.
Insane. I want to know what was going on when they were like sitting down and they're like, you know, previous set we had Oko and Gilded Goose and we've had, you know, like somebody was just, and like Risen Reap, like we could go on all these green blue cards and they were like,
yeah.
Maybe not enough. Let's print a 1 blue and a green, draw a card, yeah. play a land, can play from your graveyard. Like, what?
Somebody just really loves Hydroid Krasis, and they want that thing to be a 9/9 or a 10/10 as quickly as possible.
No kidding.
So any way you can ramp to Hydroid Krasis, that's what that game designer was thinking.
Yeah, like, I actually played against a Simic opponent, and I thought I was going to deck them. Because they had so many lands in play.
Mm-hmm.
Like an absurd, absurd, absurd amount. So that's kind of my Standard analysis. I think Standard's in a nice medium place. Like, is it amazing? No. But it's balanced. I think you can play control. You can play ramp. You can play aggro. Mm-hmm. There's not really... I mean, if you want to count Fires or Embercleave as combo, I don't know that I necessarily would.
Yeah.
Maybe Fires is a little bit more combo-y, but still. I mean, it plays a lot like a Jeskai control deck. Mm-hmm. And actually, weirdly, the Fires deck reminds me of, do you remember the Nihiri Emrakul combo deck from Modern? From like four
oh,
years
crazy.
Ago?
Yeah.
It feels
yeah,
a lot
yeah.
like that, where it's kind of this controlling kind of okay. situation, and then you have all these like corner cases that can end up, you know, working out for you. But Standard's fine. And, you know, if you're not playing it on Arena, you probably should be, because I feel like it's at least medium after all these bans, you know? Mm-hmm. All right, Cameron, we are going to get out of this segment, come back, and talk about Pioneer. There's a lot to cover. We'll be right back. So, Cameron, independently of one another, we came up with like very similar conclusions about what's going on in Pioneer to a level that's a little creepy. It's almost like we do a show. We've done a show together for like 5 or 6 years, right? So I actually just want it from your prism more so than what the player's tour dictates. Because I think there's a lot there, but you have like some firsthand experience. So this is on MTGO or is this on paper?
This is MTGO. Yeah, and so playing blue-white control, playing a very stock list of MTGO, where I'm playing like one of the new Elspeth sagas just in my side, just to kind of play with that. So that's like the newest addition to my card. My card pool, I should say. And I don't want to invest any more money into MTGO, right? So, like,
yeah,
I have
right.
my tickets. I am just kind of, like, slowly whittling those away until it sunsets, finally. This is the first time where I came away from a Pioneer League kind of, like, jaded.
Okay.
And, yeah, and I mean, I didn't like perform poorly by any stretch of the imagination. I went 3-2. I wasn't like upset with how I performed, but I just didn't really enjoy some of the decks that I was playing against. And I don't know if I'm being a curmudgeon in some ways, but like some of these new decks that have popped up or surfaced, like just I don't think bode well for Pioneer, right? So exactly what we were talking about last week, where you were talking about like this is a special thing, I want to be very ultra protective of it. That's kind of how I was feeling, I think, this past week playing Pioneer. So yeah. Inverter, I played against that twice. I won against it once. I lost against it once. It's a problem. I think now playing against it, part of me is like, yeah, I want a turn four combo. I think that's awesome and great, and we need that. I just don't know if Pioneer as a full meta needs that sort of deck in it. The one that I actually really enjoyed, I think, is the up-and-coming and is something to watch for, or if you want to build a deck, I think this is the like one that seems the most safe, and that's Delirium. The green-black rock Delirium deck, whatever. Very, very good, very resilient, and like I said, I think the least chance of something being taken away from it in the next couple of months. So if you're looking for a deck, definitely check out some deck list aggregators there. I think I was very impressed with it. If I had the card pool, I would totally want to build into this deck. And the one that I really didn't like, I almost posed as like showing the seams of Pioneer, was the Niv Bring to Light deck. It's a 5-color deck, uses Bring to Light, and anytime there's just like a really good 5-color deck that's not Slivers, I think that's a problem for the format. So like it's a fine deck. You can totally play against it, but when you can just choose every single piece of the color pie and play a deck and have a very competitive, very strong, very good deck, to me that takes away something from like the overall thing of what I want Magic to be, which is 2, maybe 3 color sorts of decks. When you get into 4 and 5 colors, I start to dislike those decks. I kind of dismiss them as like, that's not good game design anymore. So there I am. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm all over the place with Pioneer. I still very much enjoyed it, but I felt jaded after playing my league this week.
Okay. So, and you did not get a chance to play against Lotus Breach yet?
I have not. I mean, I've played against the Lotus before Breach, but never the new Breach card. No.
Okay. Well, because that's the other breakout deck. So there's a top 8, and so like to mirror what you've been saying, combo has kind of risen to the top. Now, last week we talked about Inverter just very briefly, and I just mentioned like I don't know why we need a pro level event in Pioneer. I don't know why that's better for the format than just straight up a Grand Prix. I think, and this isn't the most popular opinion. In fact, it's probably a very unpopular opinion. But I just don't like non-rotating formats in the context of a pro event. And I like it kind of being slowed down the kind of process of breaking a format. But again, I would definitely hear the arguments counter to that. I'm not like, you know, it must be this way. However, I just like, based upon what I saw and, you know, people's reactions to this, there were a few more, oh, here we go again. Should combo, like, be limited significantly in Pioneer is, I think, the central question that we have to ask ourselves, because one of the most frequent things that you'll hear from modern players that have burned out is combo is too, like, non-interactive combo is too big of a problem in the format. Non-linear decks, non-linear combo, or, you know, whatever you want me to call it. Hyperlinear. There we go. So, Cameron, let's say you were in charge of that. Would you go after these decks, the Lotus Breach, the Niv to Light, the Inverter decks? Would you say, okay, yeah, combo just needs to go away from this format, or what?
Maybe just not as resilient or consistent, right? Like, I think... I don't know, like that seems so weird to say. The idea of Modern being like this turn four format, I think was kind of a fallacy in some ways that didn't work out in its favor, right? And so, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, in Pioneer, should it be a turn X sort of format, and then an established combo deck is acceptable in that means? And I just don't know if I even agree with that idea. So, yeah, I guess I would try to go after combo for the sake of this format, for the sake of, like, what makes a good format, which... my only blueprint is Legacy, right? Like, to me, that is the best. You have combo decks, Storm of which is very, very good and consistent, and something like, I don't know, Through the Breach decks. I mean, we can go on and on and on with Show and Tell decks, right? Like, these consistent decks that are really, really good, but they have a place that can exist with combo, mid-range, and aggro. So maybe I'm talking myself into circles here. I don't know. Legacy is my blueprint. I'll just say that.
Yeah. Well, I think it should be because, you know, on a qualitative level, it's more fun to play. Like, I feel like when you talk to people that play all the formats, they will tell you Legacy is the most fun. Also, by the way, not a Pro Tour format. Never has been except for the Anniversary Pro Tour. But I would also say that we as a group, or I should say Magic players, sometimes underappreciate the role that something like Delver plays in a format like Legacy or Death and Taxes, and that it shuts down very, very particular combo decks and keeps those things in check, while at the same time being, you know, like especially in the case of Death and Taxes, having a bad matchup against Control, right? Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say that once the format gets wide enough, something like Death and Taxes... it doesn't beat all combos, right? Like, it's probably not very good against Enchantress, for example. But Enchantress is a like slice, very small slice of the metagame. And Pioneer just doesn't have that, especially with, you know, the desire to make it a competitive format so soon. I would also say that whenever you cut out the fetch lands, which I think was a good idea and is a good idea, you cut off tempo deck's ability to be hyper-aggressive. If you watch, like, there was a match... William Jensen, I can't remember the other guy, forgive me. It was an Inverter versus Lotus Breach match. And both of these decks really did not do anything for the first two or three turns. And you think, well, if there's a real aggro deck there that could back it up with some kind of tempo, and maybe that just hasn't come out yet or been solved yet, it could really interact with these. That being said, I've had enough of this kind of... like, I feel like if I want that style of deck, I can go to Modern.
Oh, like, yeah, absolutely.
Let's just make a mid-range format that's non-rotating. Let's just go after that. And I feel like by virtue of you saying no fetch lands, that's kind of where your goal is, right? Mm-hmm. Now, look, it's not DEFCON 5, like, oh my gosh, everything's Demir Inverter. That's not what we're saying.
No.
We're just saying, like, should we be stricter in terms of our limitations on these decks than we are on Modern? And I think that's a very real possibility. Also, I think it's a very real possibility that Dig Through Time's days are...
it's gone, man.
Yeah. It is. Yeah, because if you look at the common thread between Inverter, Lotus Breach, Blue-White Control, it is Dig Through Time.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes all those decks much more consistent. And as a Control player, look, hey, I'm shoving those Dig Through Times into my Control deck. I love it.
Yeah.
But maybe it's time to say goodbye. Now, the other thing that's like... some other like quick questions I had for you. One thing to ponder, Smuggler's Copter. Was that actually the force of will for this format? Was that the one that was actually making... I'm serious.
Yeah.
Keeping these combo decks in check. Remember, the best deck when Smuggler's Copter was in was, you know, Night Market Lookout Mono Black or whatever the crap that stuff was. So, I mean...
it's such an interesting question. I mean, I would love to see now, like, what would the data be if you had Smuggler's Copter in with these very specific enchantments from Theros, right? Could it create a safety valve? Could you create a little bit more I guess it wouldn't be a tempo advantage, but just more of an aggro advantage for...
it's pretty hard,
mono
though.
Black, right? Yeah. So that's a very interesting question, and I don't think we'll ever... get the right answer.
Yeah, dude, that just seems like a Reddit post that's looking to get comments, right? Was Smuggler's Copter force of will? Yeah. And please, yes, I know Inverter has flying, so please don't. I know, right? And the other kind of like weird question here is Blue White just in this format the control list, like Blue Black or Esper has no hope? Is that the case?
I think that's right. Yeah. It's really interesting to look at the lists between Historic right now and Pioneer. If you look at like the default Historic control list, it's Esper right now. And it's a very good deck. I mean, I've played a little bit of that here and there in the mm-hmm. Historic queues. And it's really, really good. And if you look at that blue-white list in Historic, the differences between the blue-white control list in Pioneer and Historic are getting razor thin. We're talking like Dig Through Time and a couple extra, like maybe some enchantments here or there that you're using in one versus the other. But they're very similar as far as like, do you have Teferis? Like, you know, like that's the question, right? So yes, I think right now Pioneer, it is the default control list. I'm hopeful that Esper might find its way with a few other iterations. My hope is on Esper just because I really like that sort of play style. It's there. It does have teeth. It's just, I think, there's some other things going on within the Pioneer aggro shells that Esper currently just has not a really good matchup against.
Yeah, it just is weird because when you think of the card pool, both Fatal Push and Thoughtseize would be easily, I think, the best two black cards in the format. Wouldn't be that hard to splash them, but just not good enough, you know? It's a very strange...
Yeah.
Like, I think you could make an argument that your Esper deck should literally be the only black cards in the deck would be Thoughtseize and Fatal Push. And then everything else would be what you think of as blue-white. And, you know, maybe I just need to, like, work on that and brew it and see what I think. And but, dude, Push seems good. Push seems good in a lot of ways right now.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
So anyway, we'll see. We're gonna be researching some more Pioneer as time goes by. I'm sure we'll be like pouring through lists to see what we think. Anyway, Cameron, we're gonna cut out a segment, come back, talk about what we've been watching, reading, playing. I lost my train of thought. A virtual like mixed bag. A
menagerie.
Potpourri. Yeah, menagerie. I'm tired, man. I'm just tired. Let's go. Chiefs won the Super Bowl. I can't even think straight anymore. So, Cameron, I don't know what the farewell is, so educate me.
It's a charming indie film by a director named Lulu Wang. So it's a story about like a Chinese-American girl who's played by Awkwafina, who I don't know if you're familiar with.
Very
talented actress, rapper and whatnot, but actress specifically, I really like her and what she's been doing in certain things. Her grandmother is diagnosed with a terminal lung cancer. And so it's a story of her going with her family back to China to kind of spend like the last days with grandma before she passes away. And it's drama, it's comedy, it's extremely well written. It's just a really nice, simple film. Like I was really just kind of blown away by just like how, you know, straightforward and good it was. It was just a really good, strong film that I wasn't expecting. It kind of came out of nowhere. She was on the Vanity Fair Directors Roundtable with like Martin Scorsese and Todd Phillips from The Joker and, you know, Noah Baumbach. So it was like this really interesting thing. And she struck me, the director, as like one of the people actually having something really interesting to say, while Martin Scorsese, like this larger than life person, and had a very interesting viewpoint on the direction of Hollywood. And then again, her viewpoint was like, I thought the most enlightening. So I highly recommend checking out that if you're into like filmmaking, directing, anything like that, that director's roundtable is really, really interesting. It made me want to watch her film, and I came away just very much enjoying it. It's an American film, and I would say 80% of it is in Chinese with subtitles. So it almost feels like a foreign film in some ways, but really good, dude. Like, highly recommend just checking out. It's a very simple, straightforward movie. Funny, charming, heartwarming, good.
So is this on a streaming service, or is this some one that you saw in the theater?
We rented it on iTunes. It was like 99 cents, but I guarantee it'll be on like Hulu or Netflix here in the next couple of months.
Sweet. So I'll check it out on the treadmill.
Yep.
Should be
yep.
good. Now, dude, I feel like that is the kind of experience that I'm missing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, everybody's like, oh, you got to see 1917. I hear this all the time. And, Cool. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I kind of know what I'll get out of that experience.
Mm-hmm.
But those kind of like smaller indie, like The Big Sick, those kinds of experiences that I can, you know, well-written character pieces, which used to be kind of the norm in the early 90s, and are now just kind of evaporated into nothingness, which is, you know, everything else is a Marvel superhero movie or a straight to Netflix teen romance. Like, there's just not a lot in between. No, I do want to say this, and I don't know that I've mentioned it before. Speaking of 1917, my cousin does a podcast called The History of the Great War, and is one of the top World War I podcasts. Have I ever told you about this?
That's your cousin?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, mind blown. That's amazing. I knew you had like a history cousin. I don't think I realized that there was the same. Anyway, yes. Continue, please.
So anyway, he just finished The History of the Great War. And he's gonna move on to World War II. I mentioned to him on Twitter, I'm worried he's not gonna finish the trilogy, but a fantastic podcast, great guy, one of the family members that I really like. You know, it's hard to put a price tag on that.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for, if you're like into history, now I will say, like, it is something where he really grows throughout the podcast. But yeah, there's some great stuff in there. If you're like one of these people that really likes listening to like hardcore history or something, check him out. Good stuff. His name is Wesley, History of the Great War. That show wrapped. I think he did it for like 4 years or something. And not the kind of podcast where it's like you and I, just a couple schmucks like talking, you know, like real firsthand research all the time. Like, you put in a ton of work. On a lesser note, I wanted to... So, look, comic books, I try and sprinkle them in. I try and Salt Bae them in here and there because in my life, you know, like, usually I'm on one of the services and then I subscribe to about two or three comics a month. I don't do a ton of paper comics anymore. I love the feel and the vibe of them, but they are really expensive now. It's $4 an issue, so you kind of, that can add up on you fast. And then what's Marvel Unlimited? Like $6 for Unlimited? You know, it kind of becomes...
Yeah.
I want to support my local comic shop too, so I make a special effort to go there. And anyway, so one of the new big pickups, I kind of feel like Marvel's been back on the upswing in the past, you know, few like months, like a little bit more than a year. They really had a dry spell. And DC, if you want me to be super honest with you, was just making better books on a month-to-month basis across their whole line. Superman, Batman, like there were bright spots. A lot of people liked Vision for Marvel. I really loved the Black Widow series, and that was written by this guy named Mark Waid, who's a very famous comic book writer. He wrote Kingdom Come. He's very associated with DC, but he's done indie stuff. He's done Marvel stuff. He wrote Captain America, what was that, 500, you know, about a year ago. And so he started a new issue or a new series, a new ongoing. The second issue comes out next week, but the first issue of Doctor Strange, it's called Doctor Strange, Surgeon Supreme. And the premise is that Doctor Strange is going to set aside being a superhero for X amount of days a week and go back to being a surgeon. And it is a really cool angle. And Mark Waid really wallows in tradition with these superheroes, you know? Uh-huh. I think I saw him on an interview once. I want to say it was about Batman, but he said, there has never been a thing made for video or a comic printed about Batman that he has not read. So he is kind of a historian of these characters as well. And he really does a great, when he's at his best, he's really playing with the traditions of these characters. And I think this is, like, the first issue I thought was a ton of fun. I want to say Kev Walker was the artist, and I really, really liked it. So if you are, like, a Marvel Unlimited fan, just set that aside for, like, 6 months from now to when it pops up on the the thing. But I didn't think anybody would do such a good job after Jason Aaron kind of, like, really had a great run on Doctor Strange for whatever that was, like, 5 years. Maybe a little less than that, maybe, like, three. But I thought it was a ton of fun and immediately called my comic shop and said, put me down for the second issue. So
awesome. Yeah.
Really, really good fun record. Is it going to change your life? No. Right?
This is a like good, a fun solid concept, though. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Anyway, so Cameron, if someone would like to get at you and recommend how to get out of Blighttown in Demon Souls, where could they find you?
Yeah. At Cameron_McCoy. Call me off calendar, man.
And I am at Curtis Now. Our official show feed is @SpikeBeatMTG. We will check you guys next week.